Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Great big Monday show. We promised it and we are delivering. Carlo Broussard here this hour. Carlo is an apologist here at Catholic Answers, author, speaker extraordinaire. He's been traveling all around the country in recent days. So we're happy to have him here behind the microphone with us. He's also the author of a fine book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. Hello, Carlo. How are you?
Hey, Si. Man, you set the standards high, man. You're like expecting me to deliver.
Be good.
I better be
good.
I better bring it, brother.
Well, that's what we say at all the meetings. You better be good, Carlo. but you always are. You always do bring it. And this is kind of in your wheelhouse, our topic today, a rational approach to God's existence. Let's put it this way. There are maybe lots of irrational way approaches to God's existence. So maybe we can touch on that a little bit, that we can come at it without being fully reasonable about it. Is that a way to say it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so like, for example, one non-rational or irrational approach to God's existence would be one that demands scientific evidence to prove that God exists. And that would simply be a categorical mistake. You would be demanding something from science that it, in principle, cannot deliver on, because science is restricted to detecting things within physical reality. And if God exists, he would be immaterial, as classically defined, and thus beyond the boundaries of that which science, in principle, can detect. So just like the metal detector, right, to use an example from philosopher Ed Fazer, just like the metal detector can't detect that which goes beyond the boundaries of metal, right, such as plastic cups, so too science, in as much as it's restricted to physical reality, can't detect that which goes beyond physical reality. In this case, God or the human soul or angels, right?
Yes.
So for one to demand that science detect God in order to prove that God exists would simply be a categorical mistake, right? You're fundamentally using the wrong instrument in trying to detect this entity that we call God. So you would have to pull out another tool from the tool shed, namely philosophy. Now, I have to be clear. Notice how I phrased it: to demand science in order, scientific evidence in order to prove God's existence would be an irrational approach. But that's not to say that science can be a help in giving one good reasons to believe and infer based upon empirical evidence that God exists, in the sense that, for example, contemporary cosmology would seem to suggest with a high degree of probability of an absolute beginning of time and physical reality, whether it's just our universe we're talking about or the multiverse. You know, and Father Spitzer has done a lot of work with this at the Majus Center. Dr. William Lane Craig has done a lot of work with this and sort of sharing and giving to the popular audience that contemporary cosmology. And that's scientific evidence would point to a beginning, period. That's as far as science can go. And then we would have to philosophically infer from that, well, that would necessarily require a creator. Mm-hmm. So although science can't prove the infinite creator, that the infinite creator exists, it can give credible evidence to maybe a premise that you would use within an argument, in this case the Kalam argument, that would give a high degree of probability, more reason to believe in the beginning of time and physical reality rather than not, and then infer from that an infinite creator. But notice how that scientific evidence is not proving God's existence, but at least it gives credence to the theistic worldview, and that's a rational approach. So one could look at that scientific evidence and conclude, well, it would have good reason to think that there would be a creator. It wouldn't be a metaphysical proof or a demonstration in the classical sense of, like, for example, Aquinas's five ways, but it would nevertheless be a rational approach, and that's legitimate. Or, for example, you know, the evidence that contemporary cosmology gives us of the fine-tuning of the initial conditions at the Big Bang and the fixed numerical quantities called universal constants and their fine-tuning, right? That small window of opportunity of their numerical values being what they need to be for the development of the universe to house life forms, right? And then philosophers will take that evidence and then say, well, given our experience of seeing complexity within things, we reason to an intelligence. And those are what we call in philosophy probabilistic arguments. And that's a rational approach. It doesn't quite carry the weight of a metaphysical demonstration such as the first, second, third, fourth, fifth way of Aquinas and other ways. But it is a rational approach. But notice how that's distinct. A rational approach that can use science in the inquiry, distinct from the irrational approach of demanding that science prove that God exists, you see?
Right. And I then love that metaphor about the detector, because you're saying – it would be like saying use this metal detector to prove that I have a plastic cup somewhere in this bag.
That's right.
It doesn't do that.
Correct.
So that's irrational.
Correct, because the instrument is restricted in its detecting power. So
and science is the same.
That's right. So that the metal detector doesn't detect the plastic cups. It doesn't follow from that the plastic cups don't exist. So too, science is restricted in its detecting power. So that it doesn't and even cannot detect God, angels, or human souls, human rational souls, it doesn't follow from that those entities don't exist. So we have to be very careful in what type of evidence we're looking for, because this comes up very often in our shows here on Catholic Answers Live, especially when Trent's on and folks who call in and say, well, why are you an atheist or why are you an agnostic? Well, I haven't seen any evidence for God. But then when you press them and seek out what type of evidence that they're allowing in the courtroom, they're only allowing scientific evidence. And that I think that's based upon the assumption that they intuit or implicitly believe that scientific evidence is the only rational form of evidence, right? And then, of course, that's the worldview of scientism, which is self-refuting in and of itself because it's not the product of scientific inquiry and thus not scientific knowledge, and therefore, according to its own principle, not real knowledge. So it's very important to distinguish between these rational approaches and irrational approaches. And one last thing I would say, Cy, you know, because the question always comes up, well, what about the little old lady, you know, pushing the beads in the church who hasn't gone through the sophisticated philosophical arguments for God's existence? Is her belief in God rational? And the answer to that question is yes, it can be rational, because as St. Thomas Aquinas would even teach, that belief in God based upon faith is possible. Although belief in God or the proposition that God exists in and of itself can be known and demonstrated by the natural light of human reason, it can also be rationally believed based upon faith. So the person who believes that God exists based upon the testimony of, say, Jesus Christ, who rose from the dead, right? That gives good reason for somebody to believe what he says, namely that God exists, and believe it based upon faith. So that's a rational approach as well, but it's important that belief in God is not an article of faith like the Trinity is, or the Incarnation is, or the Virgin Birth, or the various other articles of faith that we believe to be supernaturally revealed by God. St. Thomas Aquinas and others and the scholastics would call belief in God, or the proposition that God exists, a preamble of faith. That which comes before faith, that which is necessary, or the ground of faith, because you have to have an object in which, or an object to which you can respond to in faith, right?
Yes, right.
And so that's why it's so important to establish the existence of God by the natural light of human reason, because it gives that in which we can put our faith, namely God.
888-318-7884, the number if you'd like to discuss with Carlo rational approaches to God's existence, 888-318-7884. I think there's a kind of there's a vulnerability in our society to quasi-scientific claims. I feel like we've somehow we have an emotional response to science, and that, and we want to think of ourselves as, I'm on the side of science. Nobody wants to be on the. It's just, I don't know how that happened, you know, but at this current moment in history, science is very exalted. And so
right.
everyone wants to be on the side of science. And they'll, and so their people are vulnerable, especially young people are vulnerable to this idea that, well, science is explaining everything. And,
right.
and it does, it keeps going on not finding God.
Right.
So help me if I'm the parent of, say, I don't know, a sixth grader, because that's how young they're getting it.
Right.
Put it in like sixth grader terms. Why is it not science-y? You're not on the side of science because you say, I don't believe in God.
That's right. Well, first of all, I think I would say, well, I would affirm them in thinking that science does lead us to come to know certain things about reality.
Yes.
So science can tell us a lot of things about the universe, right?
Yeah.
Can tell us quite a bit, but science can't tell us everything about the universe, right? So, for example, another great example from one of my favorites, you know, Ed Fazer in yeah. his book, Five Proofs of the Existence of God, he uses the example of like a checkers game, right? Mm-hmm. So you have the rule book. And the rule book tells you how to win the game, tells you, you know, the different directions in which the pieces can move, mm-hmm. right? Tells you the rules about the game. But notice that the rules presuppose, right, that there is a game in the first place.
Right.
And that there's pieces involved in the game, yeah. right? And so you can't answer the question, well, why does the game exist in the first place? Why are the checkers red and black instead of purple and blue?
Mm-hmm.
And why is this game governed by this set of laws I find in the booklet rather than some other set of laws? Like, why is it that the checker pieces move diagonally and not side to side or up and down yeah. like my kids might want to play?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You can't answer those questions by reading the rule book, right? Because the rule book presupposes that those things are the way they are. The only way you can answer that question is to step outside of the rule book and the game itself and ask the maker of the game,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right. Why did you do it this way?
That's
yeah.
right. And similarly, science is kind of like the rule book of the checkers game. It uncovers the rules that govern the game of the universe, namely the laws of nature, right? But notice how the rules or the laws of nature presuppose that there is a universe to describe and explain,
mm-hmm.
that there are things in and constitutive of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So notice how we can't answer the question, well, why do those things exist in the first place?
Yes.
And why are those things exist? Why is our universe governed by this set of laws rather than some other set of laws? You can't answer those questions through science because science presupposes those things. You need a universe in order to start doing science in the first place, right? And the only way to answer those questions is to take a step back out of the rules of the game, namely the laws of nature, out of the game itself. And the philosopher would say God is the answer to those questions of why there are some things existing rather than not, why is our physical universe governed in a certain way rather than not. And now the atheist might disagree with the philosopher's answer to those questions.
Yeah.
But notice that in order to prove the philosopher wrong there, the atheist can't appeal to science because science presupposes all of those things. The atheist is going to have to use the tool of philosophy. And that's a legitimate debate, right? You know,
yeah.
And going back and forth and weighing the evidence. So, I mean, the bottom line would be, look, son, you know, my sixth grade son, I would say, listen, science can give us a lot of knowledge about reality, but it can't give us all knowledge about reality. There are other tools in the tool shed, namely philosophy. Now, if he's smart and he wants to know, well, why is that the case? Well, then I would employ a philosophical analysis of the worldview of scientism itself. And I say, okay, you think scientific knowledge is the only real form of knowledge? Well, what scientific experiment could we perform to determine the truth value of that belief?
Yeah.
That's not scientific knowledge.
You can't do a scientific test on
That's
whether
right.
or not science is the only way to know things.
Amen to that. That's philosophical knowledge. So if that's philosophical knowledge, then philosophy is fair game. And so we need to use philosophy in order to know certain things about reality. And even to say, as Hawking did, the late Hawking in his 2010 Grand Design book, philosophy is dead?
Yeah.
Well, that presupposes the use of philosophy in order to come to the conclusion that philosophy is dead. You can't get out of it.
Which is a self-refuting argument.
That's right.
But, and philosophy never said that about Stephen Hawking. Carlo?
Yes.
You're going on the cruise.
I am.
Yes. I wanted to talk with you about it for a minute because you and I are both going February 10th through 17th aboard Holland America's new Stottendam ship, a brand new ship that they're still building right now as we speak.
As I always say, they better tighten those screws very tight.
We're going to visit Fort Lauderdale, the Bahamas, Jamaica, Grand Cayman Islands, and Mexico. But what are we going to be doing during that trip? What kind of stuff happens?
Well, I know I'm going to be eating a lot of stuff and I'm going to be hanging out with Cy Kellett and I think I'll be giving a talk or two every once in a while.
Right, yeah. And you know what something else you're going to be doing is you're going to be sitting at a table at dinner and you're going to have 10 people with you at dinner and it'll change each night. And that
is, cool.
To me, that is so much fun. That's like the most fun part of the cruising because you just get to sit there and go, you know, any question that people have and then you can learn so much from the people you're sitting with. They're very knowledgeable people. It's kind of a you can sit there and talk as long until you're exhausted with people. It's just so much fun. And then you get up and you all go and you see that Tim Staples is still at his table talking because no matter how long you talk for, he can talk longer than you can.
Indeed, yes.
Tim will be there. Chris Check, our president, will be there. You and I will be there, Carlo. And then our chaplain will be Father Chrysostom Baer, the prior of St. Michael's Abbey. He'll be celebrating Mass with us each day, hearing confessions. And we'll just be – it's kind of a getaway from it all in a wonderful setting and learn about the Catholic faith and then share faith.
That's
with
right.
People. It's a wonderful experience.
It's a great time to be able to mix fun and study and love and spirituality all at the same time. You know?
All with swimming with the dolphins.
Amen to that.
You just go to CatholicAnswersCruise.com and sign up. We want you to come. CatholicAnswersCruise.com.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
Every single day, I get to help our listeners of the Sunrise Morning Show wake up, find out what's going on in the church and the world, and then walk with them as we all seek to grow in knowledge and love of Jesus Christ and the Catholic faith. I mean, how could it get any better?
The Sunrise Morning Show with Anna Mitchell and Matt Swaim. Tomorrow morning, 6 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, enjoying my time with Carlo Broussard, one of the finest Catholic speakers you'll hear. And if you want him to come and speak at your place, wherever it is, he'll come. You just got to go to CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com and get him there. You were recently in – I know you were in Houston. You were in Milwaukee as well?
Yeah, this past week, I think Wednesday to Friday of last week, I was in Milwaukee. I gave a talk at the Chesterton Academy there, a little small starter-up school, which apparently I didn't know, but is a part of a greater network throughout the country.
Oh.
There are Chesterton Academies throughout the entire country that's sort of under one umbrella of a school. And so that was a lot of fun. I talked about religion. Why should I care? A fundamental problem of what's important about religion. And then that evening, the Thursday evening, I spoke for the Legatus group there in Milwaukee. Had a great time and talked about why science cannot eliminate God, which is actually my topic for the upcoming conference here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So they got a little taste of what I'll
got
be
to practice.
Presenting. Yeah, I did. Yeah, yeah. It was a good opportunity to practice the delivering the content. Yes, yeah, so right. I had a good time.
Carlo, lines are filling up, but we talked about irrational approaches to God's existence, like scientism is itself
right.
irrational.
Right.
Is there a rational? So there must be a rational approach.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So we didn't get that.
Yeah. Well, we kind of touched on some of the rational approaches. We spoke about using science that could possibly help one in the inquiry and give credence to theism, but not prove that theism is true. But there are arguments that can prove, metaphysically speaking, that God exists, such as Aquinas' five ways. And I kind of like, in summarized form, the second way we could formulate it as follows. Premise one, if everything were caused to exist by something else, right? So Fido right here and right now is being caused by the activity of the sun, right? Heat and light is contributing to Fido existing right now. You take away that causal activity of the sun, then Fido's going to cease to exist. He's not going to be living anymore. He's going to go out of existence, right? So if everything were caused to exist by something else, then there would be this infinite series of caused causes. And we're not talking about a series extending back in time. We're talking about a series right here and right now.
Right,
so
right.
The lamp being held up by the link of chains, by the hook in the ceiling, or the train cars being moved right here and right now by the engine cars. So it's not necessarily a horizontal series, more so like a vertical series. So rather than the dominoes being lined up from right to left and flipping one over and then to
right.
the last one, it's more of this vertical, right? So you
stack
have
things
the
up,
stacking
yeah.
of the dominoes. So you have the last one being held up by ultimately the first one, however many you have in between, right? So, but there cannot, and so that's premise one. If everything was caused to exist, then there would be, by something else, then there would be an infinite series of caused causes. That's just the stated briefly. And then premise two, but there can't be an infinite series of caused causes, because if there were no first member, a source from which the caused causes were deriving their causal power, then no caused cause would exist in the series, and thus there would be no effect. And so, therefore, not everything can be caused by something else in order to exist. So that's just sort of the second way in a summarized form. And, of course, we'd have to spell it out a little bit more. But the key premise there is premise two, that there can't be this infinite series of caused causes. And the fundamental reason being is that there would be no first member as a source from which to derive causal power, because anything that's caused to exist by something else, we know metaphysically that thing doesn't have existence by nature.
No, because that other thing could fail to cause it to exist.
That's right.
Right.
That thing would not have existence by its nature, like a triangle has three straight sides by nature.
Right.
Its existence would be accidental, would be extrinsic, it would be coming from something outside of itself, right? So
right.
if everything in the series is caused to exist by something else, then every cause in the series doesn't have existence by nature. But if no cause in the series has existence by nature, whence would existence come?
Yeah.
There would be no source from which these caused causes could derive their existence. And if that's the case, then none of them would exist. And if none of them would exist, then we would have no effect. But we do see effects coming from efficient causes.
That's a relief when we look around. Everything's still here. So there is a cause for all of
things this. Things do exist. And so therefore, ultimately, we conclude there must be some cause that has existence by nature that is not caused by anything outside of itself.
You know what I call that? God.
Amen. That's what Aquinas would say.
Fair enough. Alex in Fort Worth, listening on 910 a.m. You are first up with Carlo Broussard. Your question, Alex.
Well, thanks for taking my phone call. The call screener didn't sound like I had much of a chance with this question, but I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Alex.
I basically want to state that the church believes in many supernatural items, I could call it, on Earth.
Sure.
The Shroud of Turin, even the Sudarium that's in northern Spain, items like this, the Virgin of Guadalupe.
Okay.
Right, that these items are beyond this world.
Okay.
Does the church truly, truly believe this, and why isn't it more widely known? Because this would show proof, wouldn't it?
Right. So what you're appealing to here are miraculous events present on earth, correct? Now, some of the things that you listed there, in particular the shroud, well, the church has no official position on that. So there's debate about whether the shroud is authentic, etc. But there are some bona fide miracles, like, for example, the Eucharistic miracle of Lanciano, which in AD 700, the bread and wine changed to what appeared to be human flesh and human blood. When scientifically tested in 1970, they verified it was human blood, it was human flesh, and that substance still exists to this day, man. I mean, over 1,300 years, and it's still existing without any sort of preservatives, whatever. And that's a bona fide miracle. And I would agree with you, Alex, that that can serve as a help for inquirers and unbelievers to lead them to the conclusion, well, you know, this is something that in principle is beyond what nature can cause. And so therefore, it must be the effect of some transcendent cause, some cause beyond nature. And then once you philosophically reason through it, you may very well come to the conclusion, it's God.
Now the music's playing, so we got to take a quick break. But
maybe we can tie it up on the other end.
Want to pick it up on the other side. Okay, Alex, if you can, please hang on. We'll be back in just a minute with more with Carlo Broussard. We're talking about rational explanations for the existence of God, a rational approach to God's existence with Carlo. We'll be right back with more of that after this.
This is Cardinal Francis Arinze, speaking to you through Catholic Answers Live. God bless you.
In a culture that worships the pursuit of sexual pleasure, the Catholic Church's teaching on contraception can seem archaic and unintelligible. Its critics say it is outdated, theologically unfounded, and even harmful. And even faithful Catholics can have difficulty explaining this moral teaching. Catholic Answers is out to change all that. That's why we've just released Trent Horn's dynamic new DVD, The Case Against Contraception, using scripture, papal and magisterial teaching, natural law, and new insights provided by social science and medicine. Trent put forward a compelling case for Catholic teaching with his trademark charity and persuasive graciousness. Be prepared to give a defense. Order your copy of The Case Against Contraception today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging onto the shop at catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
With the recent commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the release of Humani Vitae, there have been fresh attacks on Catholic teaching from outside and, unfortunately, inside the Church. That's why Catholic Answers thought it critical to provide a vigorous affirmation of Pope Paul VI's prophetic wisdom with our newest book, Inseparable, Five Perspectives on Sex, Life, and Love in Defense of Humani Vitae. We asked five distinguished contributors to reflect on and defend Humani Vitae from five perspectives, each of them compelling, together forming a mosaic of truth. Don't be caught uninformed when the topic comes up among friends, family, and coworkers. Order your copy of Inseparable today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or by visiting the shop at catholic.com.
What is Yom Kippur?
How can we Christians learn about repentance from it?
We're discussing this Day of Atonement tomorrow at noon Eastern on Take 2 with Jerry and Debbie.
Now let's return to Cy Kellett and more of Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, sharing the studio with Carlo Broussard, apologist here at Catholic Answers and author extraordinaire. His book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church, is available now wherever Catholic books are sold, except in France. Well, maybe the other places too. It's not in French. You don't have that book out in French, do you?
No, unfortunately not yet.
888-318-7884 is the number. We're talking about a rational approach or rational approaches to God's existence. We're talking with Alex in Fort Worth, who wants to know about miracles and their place in this in a rational approach.
Yes. So Alex brought up a great point and the importance of miracles in evangelizing, which can be used in order to lead an unbeliever to conclude that God must exist. Because as I mentioned, any bona fide miracle in principle cannot be caused by anything within nature, and even could not be caused by a created cause or finite power, because wherever a miracle occurs, you have being being given where there is non-being, which philosophically can only come from an infinite creator, namely God. Now, Alex, if you're still on the line there, you had mentioned, you know, you asked the question, well, why doesn't the church publicize these miracles more? Well, I think, Alex, it's not, if you're referring to like sort of the official magisterium of the church and sort of the hierarchical aspect of the church has done that. I mean, these miracles are documented. They're there for observation and verification. Where the ball is dropped in the individual members of the church who are called to be evangelizers in using the miracles throughout the history of the church in order to evangelize. And so that's why I wrote a 20 answers booklet called Miracles, which sort of goes through some of the highlighted miracles throughout the history of the Catholic Church. So what are your thoughts, Alex?
Well, my basic thoughts is that if there are as many miracles, and there are so many of them, really, I mean, we don't have time on this phone call. There are bleeding statues. Just a quick one. I was just a few years ago to the chapel that's in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Have you been there?
Is that the one with the stairs that are built in a way that's beyond explanation or something? No,
not only that, but from what I understand, the wood is otherworldly as well.
Yeah,
that's
interesting.
That's what I was told when I was there.
Yeah.
That the wood itself has been examined by scientists.
Okay.
So we have examples of people like Marta Robbins, I believe in France. She's a contemporary of our lives to some degree.
Okay.
That only existed for 50 years, only receiving the Eucharist.
Okay.
Well, Alex, I just want to be careful because I don't know all the names that you might quit. But we have the Catholic Church actually publicizes miracles. That is, when there's someone who is beatified or made a saint, there has to be a miracle attested to, and at each of those stages, and there's dozens and dozens, hundreds of people living on this earth today who have certified miracles. Now, why don't you hear them reported in the New York Times? I don't think the New York Times is interested. They don't want to send a reporter and investigate.
Yeah, and one interesting thing, Sai, to point out is that, you know, sometimes you can put all the miracles on the table and the person still doesn't believe. It's not going to intellectually coerce them into accepting the proposition that God exists. I mean, just like the people who witnessed the miracles of our blessed Lord himself.
Yeah.
They crucified him. They still put him on a cross and killed him.
Well, there's the one miracle where he heals the withered hand, right? And then
you broke the Sabbath.
You broke the Sabbath. Yeah, we want to kill you.
Like, that's right. So we have to keep in mind, we have to have a healthy approach to using miracles in evangelization. Some people will be properly disposed to receive the miraculous and allow it to lead them to credible belief in God. Some people will be so hardened in the heart that such evidence will not be beneficial for them. Now, granted, we still present the evidence. Whether or not they're properly disposed to receive that evidence, only God knows, and we leave that up to God. So are miracles important in an approach to God? Yes. Will they definitively, necessarily lead somebody to the rational conclusion that God exists? Sometimes they will. Sometimes they won't.
Alex, we'll have to leave it there because we do have our calls on the line here, so we'll get to those. Carlo Broussard is our guest. We're talking about rational approaches to God's existence. Our number, 888-31-TRUTH, if you'd like to get in on the conversation, 888-31-TRUTH. Aaron in Pueblo, Colorado, listening on 970 AM KSEL. Aaron, you're on with Carlo.
Greetings, Carlo. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, Aaron. Thanks for giving us a call.
We're talking about rational approaches to, and it seems to, an understanding of God. But I would like to ask about approaches to the experience of God, namely through the sacraments, and how that works, how the sacraments draw us near to God, particularly in a salvific sense. And I'm thinking about as a reaction against Protestantism, which often considers them a power play or control and whatnot. So how do the sacraments trust that understanding and experience of God? And also, I'd like to get some references from you on sacramental theology, if I could, please.
Okay, so I think, Aaron, the first thought that comes to mind is it is true that God can reveal himself in a private way, miraculously, or just experientially through the sacraments for me to personally come to the belief that maybe not only that God exists, I might be an unbeliever and walk into a church and have this divine invasion of grace, right? And realize God's in that gold box there. I mean, that's possible, right? Or even if I'm not, or even if I am a believer, to affirm that the Catholic Church is the true church of Christ and that Christ is really present in the Eucharist. So in no way, Aaron, would I deny that God can use the sacraments as a means by which he manifests himself to the person individually for that person to come to the conclusion, hey, God exists, God's real, he's here, he's in the sacraments. One thing I would say is that that's a legitimate subjective experience, right, that people do have. But when it comes to the question of persuading others about God's existence, about the truth of the sacraments, these sort of subjective experiences aren't necessarily the type of evidence that you would use to persuade another of the truth about the reality of the sacraments and the reality of God. Because most of the times, those folks who are inquiring about whether God exists, whether Jesus is truly present in the Eucharist, right, whether the sacraments are real, they're looking for objective evidence, right, whether that objective evidence comes from a philosophy in the case of God's existence, or that objective evidence comes from the scriptures in the case of what Jesus taught us about the sacraments. So somebody may very well say, you know, Aaron, great, you've had that subjective experience. That's great, but you know what? It hasn't happened to me. So give me some other type of evidence. Now, some people might be persuaded by your testimony and say, hey, Aaron's a great guy, you know, and I'm going to believe his testimony, so I'm going to start my inquiry based upon that testimony, and that's fine. But for most people, that's not going to be the type of evidence that they're looking for in order to begin living their life and ordering their life around the sacraments. So it's kind of a both-and approach, I guess. You know, yes, God can use it as an approach to him on a subjective level, but it might not quite be the evidence that is to be used in persuading others sort of in an apologetic discourse. What do you think of that, Aaron?
Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense. It's like you almost have to have a foot in the water before you go on to the sacraments.
Now here's another thought, Aaron. I mean, there is a legitimate approach in saying, okay, here's the objective evidence that I present to you, and then they fundamentally have to make a choice to respond to the evidence, right? And so that's where the invitation can come in and say, hey, look, you know, I've looked at the evidence myself, and I've made a response to the evidence and made an act of faith in Jesus Christ and following what his church teaches and receiving the sacraments. And I can speak from a personal experience that I've experienced happiness in my life. I've experienced peace. I've experienced joy. I've experienced certain temporal benefits that come from, like, for example, the sacrament of confession. When you walk out of the sacrament, you have temporal benefits of feeling at peace with God within the sphere of the senses. And so what you can do for the person you're evangelizing is saying, hey, look, I've given you the evidence, and so now I invite you to respond to the evidence. And as our Lord told the apostles, come and see.
Right. Yeah, that's very good. Would you happen to have any works you could recommend for me on that deeper sacramental theology?
Yeah, on sacramental theology in particular, nothing's coming off of the top of my head. I mean, I know there's the Fundamentals of Catholic Dogma, which is sort of a theology manual by Ludwig Ott. And in that manual of theology, you know, of course, he has a section in there on the sacraments. And in that resource, he has a variety of footnotes to various theologians, in particular, St. Thomas Aquinas' treatment on the sacraments in the Summa Theologiae. That would be a great place to go as well. I can't remember exactly which part of the Summa Theologiae. I think it's the third part where he deals with the sacraments. And then, of course, the Catechism, Aaron. I mean, the Catechism, man, and it's, what is it, the third pillar of the Catechism and section on the sacraments? It's a great read and a great resource for beginning your journey in sacramental theology.
Thanks, Aaron, for that call. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live. We're here for you.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
Here's one thing that I would recommend, what I call gap time. So, for example, you're driving in the car. When you're at home, maybe doing dishes, what are you listening to on the plane? See, I use all those gap opportunities and fill those gaps with things that are going to strengthen and deepen my faith. So I listen to EWTN podcast all the time because I also want to learn and grow and deepen in my faith.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Hey, perfect time to bulk up for the fall. That means bulk up on Catholic books. Books are normally priced $16.95 and up to $16.95 here at Catholic Answers. Can be gotten right now for as low as $3 to $5 a copy when you purchase in bulk. Sharing with family, sharing with friends, give them out as Christmas presents. Have them sit stacked on the table for the grandkids when they come home for Thanksgiving. Why We're Catholic is on the list. Made This Way, Delivered, Restored, Persuasive Pro-Life, and all of our 20 Answers titles are there. Just go to Bulk Book Specials at shop.catholic.com and get your bulk book specials today. Bulk book specials at shop.catholic.com. You wanted to correct something you said to Anthony just before we went to the break.
Yeah, I messed up. The part of the catechism where it deals with the sacraments is not the third part because it's, you know, divided into these four pillars, right? Creed. Then the second part or the second pillar is sacraments.
So that's where you go.
That's where you go, the second part of the catechism. And then, of course, the third part is morality, the life in Christ, and then the fourth part being Christian prayer. So I messed up a little bit there that I had to clarify so I can sleep tonight, Si.
I know. You take it to heart when you have even the smallest error drives you crazy.
Oh,
huh?
Yes, it does.
Let's go to Phil in Santa Cruz, California, listening to EWTN on Sirius XM satellite radio channel 130. Phil, your question for Carlo.
Great, thank you. I'm a catechist teacher for the second year confirmation program.
Right.
And last night we had our opening session,
mm-hmm.
and we always do the opening session on the existence of God.
Right.
And we divide the class into agnostics, atheists, and theists.
Okay.
And then we have a debate. We have a debate on,
great,
can you prove the existence of God?
Good for you,
so
Phil.
We had a lively conversation last night. And which, you know, the movie The Matrix always gets brought up. But what I wanted to hear from you, for these teenagers that are 14, 15, 16,
yeah,
what are your three top arguments for the existence of God?
Yeah, well, you know what I might do, Phil? I mean, I'm tempted to just, like, go through all of Aquinas' five ways, right? But I think I might take this sort of approach. I would start off with the strongest, which is sort of a metaphysical demonstration, which I articulated earlier, Phil. It's kind of like it's very close to the second way of Aquinas' five ways in the Summa Theologiae, you know, from the idea of the order of efficient causes within the world. So if everything were caused to exist by something else, then you would have this infinite series of causes. But you can't have an infinite series of causes. Therefore, not everything is caused to exist by something else. There must exist some cause that's not caused to exist by something outside of itself, but that exists by nature. Now, that's just the syllogism in a summarized form. And then, of course, you would have to unpack that. Now, Phil, if you want a resource for that, you can check out here's a shameless plug, my book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church, in which I deal with this argument in particular and walk you through step by step in how to explain and unpack the premises of that argument in order to show that the conclusion is true and that the conclusion necessarily follows from the premises. And that the premises are necessarily true, reducible to first principles of human knowledge. So it's properly a demonstration. So that's one. Now, the second possible argument you could take, Phil, is to start with the intuition of moral obligation, right? So this is what is known in, by philosophers as the moral argument. It's not necessarily a demonstration of God's existence, Phil, but boy, it sure does give one good reason to believe that God exists. So you see, and all the teenagers will affirm that there are some things that are morally binding on us, right? I mean, we can't go around murdering innocent people or raping people or torturing children for fun, etc., right? And they sense intuitively, by virtue of being a human being, that they have a moral obligation to do what they perceive to be good. And then feel when you philosophically analyze that, you're able to trace, well, what are the causes of this moral obligation? Whence does this obligation come? It can't come from nature by itself, right? It can't come from myself. So it must come from some being superior to humans that has the intelligence to know the order to the good, that has the will in order to impose the order upon us, to impose our wills to do the good and to do that which is morally right. And then that gives us good reason to conclude that such a being would be God, who is pure goodness itself. And then finally, Phil, my third approach is I might take a historical approach and say, look, we have good reason to conclude that the Gospels record accurately for us what Jesus said and did. And you establish that stepping stone, right? And then you say, okay, well, what did Jesus say and do? What did Jesus say about himself? Well, he said he was God, and he proved and vindicated that claim by performing certain miracles, which through historical investigation, we can affirm that these are historical events. And what did Jesus teach? He taught about God. He taught that God existed. So, Phil, the point for these young teenagers is, hey, listen, if we can trust what Jesus said about God and that God exists and that he is God made flesh, well, then we have good reason to affirm that God exists. So that's a sort of a historical approach to giving rational reasons, credibility, to believe the proposition that God exists. So, that's a lot, Phil, but what do you think of those three approaches?
Oh, I think they're great. I think the Thomas Aquinas example is a bit over their head. I think I used an example of the prime mover for that particular argument, but I like the last argument the best, the fact that we know from the Roman historical record that Jesus did exist, and we know from the earliest carbon dating of the Bibles that it was very close to the time of Jesus, and we can credibly argue that they came from actual real witnesses of Jesus' life.
That's right, that's right. And I actually, in my book, Phil, Prepare the Way, I have a few chapters in there where I go through strategies. I walk you through strategies on how to establish the historical credibility of the Gospels. And with regard to Aquinas' Second Way, you know, Phil, one thing I've experienced, I wouldn't sell those teenagers short. They got some sharp cookies in there. And once you study it and you learn it yourself and you grasp it yourself and what's necessary for something to exist, etc., right? I mean, we all can affirm things exist. And so we're simply asking the question, what's the ultimate explanation of the fact that something is existing rather than not existing? And once you grasp the argument yourself, I think you'll be able to articulate it for even 14 and 15 year olds.
Phil, hang on the line. I think Marie wants to get your contact information. We'll send you a copy of Carlo's book, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. Appreciate that call, Phil, and appreciate all you do to prepare young people for their confirmation.
Amen.
Bianca in San Antonio, listening in San Antonio, Texas, I assume, listening on Guadalupe Radio. You are up next. Bianca, your question for Carlo.
Yes, hello, sir. My question is, I was having a kind of a debate with an atheist.
Sure.
And I told, he asked me a question, and I told him I would do my research and get back to him.
Okay.
So this is what I'm doing now. So my question is, he says that, because we already had the science debate.
Right.
So after that, he threw at me that he doesn't believe in God because the Bible, he says that the Bible promotes genocide, murder, and rape.
Okay.
So what can I tell him?
Well, first of all, Bianca, you want to ask him, why is it that you would conclude God does not exist based upon this premise that the Bible teaches about a God who supports genocide, rape, and murder? So that's the first line of attack. I mean, because you can affirm philosophically that God exists and at the same time reject what the Bible says. You don't necessarily have to affirm what the Old Testament says and what the Jewish people have handed down to us about God in order to affirm the proposition that God exists, which we can come to know through philosophy. So, affirming the God of the Old Testament and atheism are not mutually exclusive, right? Or I should say, affirming. So you can be a theist and still at the same time reject what the Jewish tradition is handing down to us, right? But here's, I think, the problem, which is at the root of the problem, Bianca. Notice how he just said, well, the Bible supports genocide, rape, and murder. Well, you simply ask him, well, where is the evidence for that? Because nowhere will you find the Bible supporting or God approving of rape and murder. Now, will you find instances of God giving a command to a prophet who has demonstrated his credibility to be a prophet of God to exercise capital punishment on a wicked people and wicked peoples in plural? Yes. But that, Bianca, that actually presupposes a fundamental problem of capital punishment in and of itself, perhaps, and the authority that God has to administer capital punishment on rational creatures, his creation, or to appoint a prophet of his to administer capital punishment, or one who has his authority to administer capital punishment. So that's where the debate would really lie and where you have to pursue and go in order to talk about those issues, right? So those are a few thoughts that come to mind and how I would initially respond. Now, in order to equip yourself further, Bianca, I would encourage you, once again, my book and Prepare the Way. I have a chapter where I deal with some of this obstacle to God commanding his prophet to exercise capital punishment on wicked peoples back in that ancient time. And then I would also encourage you to get a hold of my colleague and friend's book, Hard Sayings, in which, did I say Trent Horn?
Yeah.
Did I say
didn't.
It? No. I didn't. Okay. by my colleague and friend, Trent Horn, he wrote a book entitled Hard Sayings, where he deals in depth with these issues, even the claim, the alleged claim that, okay, well, the Bible supports murder and rape. Well, he proves, no, it doesn't. Well, what about where God's commanding wiping out these peoples, right? Well, he deals with those as well. And he deals with these topics in a more in-depth way than I do in summary form in my book, Prepare the Way.
Okay, Bianca?
Thank you.
Thank you so
You're
much.
Welcome.
Janet, I'm going to try to get one more call in here. And Janet in Illinois listening on EWTN, you are up. It's got to be quick, though, because Carlo's not going to have very much time.
Okay, I just want to respond to the gentleman who has the youth discussing atheism. There's a gentleman, Lee Strobel, who made a couple of movies on Christ and faith.
Oh, yeah, we've interviewed Lee here.
Atheist.
Yeah.
Yeah, and one of the things, I don't know if he brought it up in his books or not, but Hubble, who developed his telescope, it shows how one of the proofs of the Big Bang is that all of creation or the universe is going out further and further. But if you bring it back in,
sure,
according to with the Hubble telescope, proving that it came from an original burst.
Okay.
That's pretty cool. I think the kids might understand that.
Yeah, and I've actually, I'm glad you brought that up, Janet, because I'll be honest with you, it was slipping my mind at the time. But we talked about this earlier in the broadcast where science can be employed not to prove God's existence, but at least give credence to the theistic worldview, in as much as contemporary cosmology does give us evidence for the high likelihood of an absolute beginning. And for a 14 or 15-year-old who is scientifically inclined, that may very well be persuasive evidence that they think, hey, you know what? I have rational grounds and good reason to think that God exists, given this contemporary evidence from this evidence from contemporary science. And this is what is known, Janet, as the Kalam cosmological argument, arguing for a beginning of the universe. And then, of course, philosophers give their philosophical evidence. But you can also use science to support that premise that the universe had a beginning, which would necessitate a cause outside of itself, a creator.
Janet, thanks. You did that very quickly, and I appreciate it. As we got to the top of the hour, Carla, thanks for a great hour. Really appreciate it.
Si, thank you. It was a pleasure as always,
my
friend.
Got to spend a lot of time with you today, Carla, and I enjoyed it all.
Brother. Thank you.
tomorrow, great big day. Tim Staples, both hours, open forum. We always have a ball when Tim is here for 2 hours. He gets rolling in that second hour, so it's good to have him around for that. Carla Broussard's book, again, is Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. Thanks, Nick, and doing the sound. Thanks, Brandon, doing the video. Thanks. Is she there? Thanks, Marie, doing the assistant producer stuff, and producer Darren. Tomorrow, join us. 2 hours, open forum. Tim Staples right here on Catholic Answers Live.